Welcome to the Classy Ring Attire Podcast. I'm Joel.
I'm Chris.
And it's time to get classy.
Let's do it. So obviously the big news this week that we have to touch on immediately is Roman Reigns coming back.
Yes.
Not only to give us an update, which we all thought, like, you know, maybe he's, you know, it's like, hey, still going strong, you know, but the fight continues kind of thing. Instead, we find out he's completely in remission.
Yes, he's completely in remission and is possibly back. Like, back?
It sounded like he was pretty back. I think someone had said that they started seeing advertisements for, you know, like, local markets for Roman at Fastlane.
Yeah.
And it seemed like they were, like, the next segment they were starting, you know, a feud with him and Baron Corbin, which, you know, whatever. You know, it's not something that we're thrilled about, but it does mean that Roman Reigns is back in the ring, so can you really, like,
but he's,
how much can you really complain?
He's relevant enough, again, to the current product for heels to start bashing him.
Yes.
Which...
And, you know, he did the run-in or for the save later on in the show.
Right.
The whole Dean Ambrose thing is weird now, and but
well,
I don't know.
I mean, when you like, Roman's gone, and we're going to turn Dean heel and make this storyline happen,
yeah,
you don't think, but we have to wrap it up in 4 months because Roman's going to be back from...
Right.
You know, cancer. No, like, that was, I'm sure, not a consideration because nobody's like, well, when Roman comes back in 4 months,
yeah,
we need to be prepared for this. So this is a little interesting because we've always had, like, the true Shield reunion that we want has always been
And you would think they would have better luck the third time around with this reunion, like the third reunion.
Yeah.
And it makes you kind of wonder where exactly, if Roman is, you know, on, you know, back in the roster, back, you know, active, at least on the televised shows. I don't know if he's going to do live events. I'm sure he probably will. But if he wants to send them out, you know what, honestly,
yeah, that's fine.
I'm okay with that.
This is a great reason to be a part-timer.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's one that I definitely would not give him any flack for. But it makes you kind of wonder where he's going to fit in with the whole WrestleMania puzzle.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking, fatal four-way elimination match for the Universal Championship. Because if you want to be all, you know,
stick to kayfabe.
There you go. Before he found out about the diagnosis and everything, he had a title match at Crown Jewel.
He had a title? Oh,
he had a title match coming up at Crown Jewel.
To defend his title.
Yes.
Yeah.
To defend it, right. And so he dropped the belt without ever losing it because he, you know, had the you know, leukemia. And then, so I have you bring that up. Mm-hmm. So it's not even like the whole, like, rematch thing that doesn't exist anymore or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
They made a mention that doesn't exist anymore.
Sure. But he lost his championship without ever, you know, actually losing it.
Right.
So I feel like he would, you know, they would probably, like, have a better claim for it. And apparently Vince has gotten into the habit of just changing stuff anyway. So you have that, and then you have Dean holding on to enough of the heel strands to be like, no, I want in on this, and somehow weasels his way in. And the three of them team up together to eliminate Brock first, and then you get the Shield Triple Threat that we've wanted for WrestleMania since forever, and it's before Dean would leave.
All right, you're throwing a lot at me here.
I know.
So let's unpack this a little bit at a time.
Okay.
So first of all, we'll start small. Yes, they've announced that the automatic rematch clause is no longer a thing.
Even though things have kind of just worked out to where that person who wanted a rematch got it anyway.
Yes. It's stupid to take that away.
Yeah.
I get that you weren't consistent about it. There's a, you know...
It does the work for you for feuds lasting more than a month.
Right. So, I get that, like, you know, we call out all the time. It's like, hey, there's, you know, dozens of people who technically are owed rematches.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when...
And WWE's way of fixing that is, we're just going to do away with the rematches. Okay, then. Does that make you happy? We're just going to get rid of it. It's the angry parent in the front seat of the car who actually turned the car around.
They've done it. By God, they've done it. They've turned the car.
They're just like, they went just nuclear. You know what? You know what? We're done. No. You don't get any food. You're gonna starve, okay?
You're doing Kermit arms.
I am doing Kermit arms. That's how I would be as a parent.
So my point is, yes, I get that I would love if you actually kept track. But part of that is like, so give, if you don't want this to continue, give them a rematch on Raw, have them lose just to close the book on that.
Mm-hmm.
That puts some stakes in a Raw match that, you know, keeps that going. And
it ties up everything as far as loose ends.
And plus, yes, this rematch thing is great because, you know, oh, I won, but you automatically get that rematch stipulation if you want to use it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and we're to the point where I'm not distraught. I can't look past when you're like, oh, that rematch didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you want to be like, well, you got a 30-day limit on when you get your rematch.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, oh, you can't do that. And it's really nice if you're like, hey, you know, Finn Balor should, you know, we're ready to give him a title shot. We can bring up the fact that he technically never got his rematch after he had to relinquish it 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You love, you as a country, a company. You
wow.
As, you, sorry.
You
sorry.
Went.
Sorry. Well, they want to.
You went full U.S. politics to this. We as a nation.
I mean, they want to be a whole universe. So I'm sure. I'm pretty sure. Just like, just
that's
a country.
Fair. You're still
just a country.
Yeah, you're still pretty small on the spectrum.
Yeah.
All right.
You as a company love replays.
Yeah.
So all it takes is one little replay of 3 years ago where like, and that was never solved. And I'm like, cool, back on board. And at that point, I'm like, great, that was 3 years ago. I'd love to have a replay of that. Not, oh, that was earlier this night. I don't need a replay of it. Thank you, though, I guess.
Yeah.
So, but that's that. That feels so poorly thought out. That feels so seat of the pants spur of the moment. It's like, this isn't a thing anymore. And right. I feel like it'll be a thing like after WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Someone's like, I need my rematch.
Sure, and then they'll immediately start bringing rematches back.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's just weird that to get rid of it because it does so much more for you than not having it, you mm-hmm. know, does against you.
Yes.
So
the next thing you brought up in mm-hmm. your pile. So Vince has this week.
Idea. You don't have to call it a pile.
Vince has. No, you brought up a pile of topics and like
I understand.
All in one idea.
But it brings the illusion that it's a pile of crap, but continue.
I didn't say pile of crap. I just said pile.
I just assumed,
you're the one that threw crap on
I
there.
Just assume you were being condescending. Continue.
So Vince, for the second time in, you know, the span of 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, but I think 2 weeks.
Yeah.
In a very short time, Vince has come out and said, this is the match, mm-hmm. but now it's not, this is the match.
Right.
And brought out a new person. Not even adding them to the match, just changing.
Yeah, taking one person out and putting another person
yes.
in.
Yes.
Yeah.
For no other reason than because he's good, because he's Vince.
Yeah.
So, first of all, this was Kevin Owens coming back.
Yeah.
And Kevin Owens will be facing Daniel Bryan for the title. I think this is a...
Which, like, under normal circumstances, yay. Like, fantastic. I mm-hmm. would love to see that match. But... they're both heels for one.
Well,
I assume, or I don't know. Like, Kevin Owens is in a weird situation because he kind of left as a face.
Yes, but he's also coming back to take Kofi's spot,
right.
which is a very, we right. don't like him for that reason. So, stepping out, looking beyond kayfabe, mm-hmm. I'm very happy with this. A, I get Kevin Owens back. B, that's going to be a great match.
Yeah.
C, that almost guarantees a Kofi and Daniel Bryan match at WrestleMania.
Right.
Which we assume it's like, oh, this was bigger than we thought. Let's move it. We got to, you know,
even though
this.
It's weird that they're essentially doing the same thing with Becky.
Yes. So that's fine. I'm happy for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now looking into it. So it's weird that, yes, they've had what is essentially the same segment on both shows. We're getting ready to make this match official. Vince comes out and says, no, it's not with the person you like. It's with this other person.
Except the one with Kofi just really felt like it came out of left field. Like, because it, like, there was no, like, no, there was no point where, like, oh, Kofi's spot might be in jeopardy. Like, there was with Becky Lynch. Like, you know,
right.
all this other stuff's happening. Vince just came out and was like, eh, you're out. Get him KO.
Well, like, and with the Becky thing, we had Steph and Triple H in the ring. We have the WWE's, you know, the authority, I guess, approval for this Daniel Bryan and Kofi thing. They're signing a contract here. Mm-hmm. And so it's weird that you have twice now had Vince come out and said, no, not what you want, but this. And so that could be very interesting. Do you think they have any interest in a storyline of like, oh, I mean, it's easy to build this into a power struggle storyline.
Yeah.
Vince has gone, you know, Mad King George on the product.
Yeah.
He needs to be put down.
But at this point, like, they've done that so many times. Like, I don't even know what the payoff would be. Like, you know, I don't know what the match would be or what the situation would be or what.
So,
especially since now Triple H is, you know, obviously going to be involved in something else, which we'll get to.
So, at some point in this crazy world we live in, there has to be a power struggle for the successor to Vince.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have that storyline. It's been, we've been waiting for it since Shane took over WCW.
And you've got, you know, at least in kayfabe, you've got three viable contenders.
Yes.
You know, you got, you know, the two kids, one who's been by his side the entire time and one who went away and came back.
Mm-hmm.
But he's now, you know, been back for a little bit. And then you've got the guy who's not related to the family, but has actually have been running wrestling stuff and actually been running things. And the fans know it. Everyone knows it, you know. So it's...
Well, and
it would be a really, like, you know, Game of Thrones-y type storyline.
Yeah. I mean, you can have Stephanie and Triple H versus Shane. You can have three people competing in different ways.
Yeah.
You could have Vince doing a I'm not ready to give up the throne yet, so Vince is in this competition.
I mean, you can even have, like, the wrestling avatar situation where, like, each one picks their guy.
Yeah.
Or girl, well, or whatever.
And this isn't something where you're like, okay, at, you know, Backlash, everybody's going to pick a wrestler and that person gets to control the WWE.
Mm-hmm.
This should be a huge storyline. This should be your biggest storyline since the invasion. You get one moment to write Vince off TV.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've done it like 9 times and I understand that. But, well, there's the let's, you know, blow up Vince, make a who shot JR storyline.
Yeah.
Oh, but we couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Then you have let's close out the Montreal Screwjob storyline to put a close to the Vince thing. And you did that, and that was good, and that was fine. Like, looking back on it, you did the best you could do.
Sure.
Like, but you needed, you know, in the moment, it was very cathartic to watch Bret Hart beat up Mr. McMahon.
Yeah, even if it was, you know, a decade or so too late.
Yes.
Yeah.
And looking past that, Shawn Michaels, who was also the villain of that story,
mm-hmm.
was getting the most beautiful send-off an hour later.
Right, yeah.
Like, you have to have those be separate storylines in your mind for them to still both be wonderful moments.
Yeah, no, you're right.
But my point is, the successor to the throne story, the somebody is next, that struggle should be a storyline for the ages. You won't get to do this again, really, until Shane is dying or Triple H, you know, something is happening 30 years down the line.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm not even saying, like, do it now, but just when you do it, make it a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time there is, like, seeds of, you know, something going on in the background, you're like, oh, this could be it. I don't know if this is it. The most likely thing is they were like, oh, we want to change our mind on this. Let's just make Vince go out and say it.
Yeah.
Like, it worked fine then, it'll work fine now. And there's no more thought than, like, it's just a Vince shortcut to setting up your WrestleMania card.
Yeah.
And so, at the end of the day, I'm like, fine.
Yeah.
Like,
because, I mean, ultimately, like, we see the signs, we know that surely this means, you know, something bigger. Because, I mean, honestly, like, we were all content with Kofi versus Daniel Bryan for at Fastlane, because, like, all right, well, that's probably as far as they're willing to go. And, you know, see them switch this out like they are in WrestleMania season really makes you think, like, okay, oh, they're actually going to ride this Kofi momentum.
So the big question now is, so Kofi got a huge push for support the week before Elimination Chamber.
Yeah.
the crowd was eating it up, mm-hmm. Becky Lynch levels,
yeah.
at Elimination Chamber.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd is still behind him.
Yep.
And the crowd is aware, mm-hmm. for the most part. Like, there's this boo, we don't get to see this at Fastlane.
Yeah.
But there is this awareness of, like, that's because it's going to be at WrestleMania. Mm. The crowd has not cooled on Kofi Kingston.
Right.
Like, it's not that flash in the pan thing.
Right, which is, you know, it is a very big concern in the wrestling industry. Yeah.
Yes. But do you think there is any possibility that if they keep this momentum going on Kofi Kingston, that Kofi and Daniel Bryan could be the main event of WrestleMania?
For the simple fact that WWE has this, you know, obsession with Ronda Rousey, and for mm-hmm. good reason, she's a legit star, brings in a lot of eyes.
Yeah.
I think WWE has set it in their minds that she's going to end the show for a long time now.
Okay.
And I think it would take an act of God almost for that not to happen.
Okay.
Now, if Kofi is getting that undeniable, like, you know, reaction where, like, people are wanting Kofi and no one else, which is hard to do because that's how they've been with Becky.
That's the thing is, like, yeah.
I don't think they've had a situation like this, at least not in, like, the last 10 years or so, where fans are equally hot for both a male and a female wrestler at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually it's like there's this one person that's all we care about, you know, obviously, like the Daniel Bryan
situation.
You know, like, this is the only person that we care about at all. Yeah, so I guess this is going to kind of test wrestling fans' attention spans or
well,
being able to be like, all right, it's a men's segment, so we only care about Kofi. It's a female segment, we only care about Becky.
Well, and you know that there is some thought process behind the scenes, and I'm not saying it's Vince or Triple H or anybody that you know the name of, but there is some mentality of, you know, a women's match shouldn't close out WrestleMania. That's mm-hmm. still preposterous. And so I do think the suggestion will be floated of this Kofi and Daniel Bryan thing as a thing.
Yeah.
And, like, if you want that, oh, it's a men's thing. Oh, it's the WWE Championship, the one with all the history on it.
Mm-hmm.
We've been ignoring that for this stupid red universal thing.
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden, oh, we have to. It's history. Da 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 da.
Right.
Like, you can see that happening.
Yeah. I honestly, I could see them being more tempted about whatever match Brock Lesnar's in more than this one.
Okay.
Just knowing the company. Now, like, we can, like, the closer we get to it, we can kind of, like, make our own judgments as, like, which feud deserves that spot.
Right.
And honestly, it all is hinging on which feud is able to maintain or grow the momentum that they've got right now.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard to maintain, and that's the one concern I have, because that's always seemed like the one thing with Kofi is, like, anytime that they would start to get behind him, fans would be great with it in the moment and then immediately cool off.
Right.
You know? So far, thankfully, that has not been the case. But I'm going to be a little nervous about it until things finally play out, you know?
Until it's an official match on the card.
Yeah. I would, because, like, you can only assume that whatever is going to lead to Kofi being in that WrestleMania match
mm-hmm.
is probably going to happen at Fastlane or that within that week.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe it goes against what I just said about the momentum thing and the fans, you know, containing that momentum. I would almost keep them off TV until then. And then do, like, the Chris Jericho thing with, because Jericho was off leading up to KO's match against Goldberg.
Yeah.
And then came out, huge pop. Now that's Chris Jericho. That's a whole different animal.
It is.
But, well, you know, with TV being so
but also,
replay happy, it's not like they're going to forget what happened. Yes.
But if Kofi costs whoever the championship at Fastlane, then whoever is the loser and thus not the champion is the one that now has
sure.
beef with Kofi.
Sure.
So, I don't know. There's a lot of things you could do.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things you can do without any of them being wrong. It's just how you actually execute the idea.
Yeah. There's also the option of Daniel Bryan just flat out beating KO, which really sucks for him.
It does. Because,
like, it felt like everyone was beating him before he left for the surgeries. But then the next Tuesday, Daniel Bryan, like, doing the whole thing, almost maybe even like a mirror of that segment when John Cena first announced he could make his own choice on who his next contender was back in 2012, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Or 2013. It was 2013, yeah. And he had all the people on the, or all the wrestlers on the stage, and everyone's just going nuts for Daniel Bryan. And, you know, he kind of popped out from behind the... You could do something kind of mirroring that, where Daniel Bryan is picking his own, you know,
yeah,
his next contender. And, you know, obviously doing heel things and just putting down everybody that's on the stage or something. And then have Kofi, flanked by New Day, come out and just make, basically make Daniel Bryan have no other choice.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines. Like, do something exciting like that. Like, something yeah. that'll really get the crowd going.
Yeah, no, that would be yeah. interesting. So, and then we get to going into your pile of whatever yeah. you want it to be.
Pile of interesting and fun ideas.
We get back to the fact that Roman Reigns is here, and signs are starting to point in the direction of Roman Reigns is going to be on the WrestleMania card.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we did not get anything that was like, I'm back, yeah. and Brock Lesnar, I'm coming after you.
No,
we don't have anything to suggest that. He didn't have an official sanctioned match this week, but he did get to go into action mm-hmm. in the ring. I don't think he took any hits. I think he was offense 100% of yeah, the time.
I think so, too.
And so if he did take some hits, it was very brief and...
It was very much unlike Daniel Bryan coming back.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, when he came back, he immediately took some stiff shots.
Yeah.
And we don't know where Roman is as far as training, if he has had any yeah. opportunity to do anything in ring. Because, you know, being in the gym is completely different from actually being in the ring.
And we've seen a lot of people who are not cleared for action still get to come in and have some offense in the ring. Daniel Bryan did that. John Cena's done that. The Rock's done that.
Right, yeah.
Where they're like, oh, as long as they don't take any hits, they're just, you know, offense 100% of the time.
And there's a good chance we might get a quick Shield reunion at Fastlane.
Yes.
Because it seemed like it was, you know, it's Bobby Lashley, Baron Corbin, and Drew McIntyre, you know. Then they would make nods to the Shield here and there.
Yeah.
Which throws another, like, little thing in the whole pile of, man... Poor Braun Strowman. How did they kill that?
How did they kill that so thoroughly?
And the injury at the end of 2018 didn't help, even though it was minor.
Yes.
Again, changing stuff at the last minute, as much as we loved Finn Balor in that championship moment, it kind of killed some momentum for Braun Strowman. Because honestly, I thought that would be mean for sure. Braun Strowman would win the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I thought that's what that was there for.
And ended up not. And so Braun Strowman's just kind of been... floating in this weird, you know, in between spot of like, you know, we like him and we want him to, you know, be a top face draw.
Yeah.
But not quite pulling triggers on
yeah, that. And so he was, you know, as soon as there was this announcement that Roman's going to be out for the foreseeable future, mm-hmm. he was a heel at the time, if you remember.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was an instant, we need this mm-hmm. top tier face and this is
instantly
our only
turn face. Yeah.
He instantly turned face. It was very clear that he was going to be the face of the company now.
Yeah.
And at this point, it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot he was on this show.
Yeah.
So I hope they do something with him. But if you go from, if a year passes and you go from WrestleMania tag team joke match
with a child, yeah.
Yeah. Which was great at the time.
Sure.
And I still am happy to stand by that. But if a year later you're still like, well, I guess he's in a tag team match.
Yeah.
Which is just going to, that's not a good sign.
No. I'll agree with that. I think there's going to be some interesting stuff going on with, you know, Seth and Roman and kind of probably yo-yoing back and forth with Dean. And then yeah. finally, like, all right, we're back together at Fastlane. And then maybe that'll set up something. I mean, even if it's like if Dean pulls a fast one during that match and leads to a Roman versus Seth match at WrestleMania, I'd be okay with that too.
Yes.
Like, it gives them both a high profile thing to do at WrestleMania, which I feel, you know, obviously Roman deserves it, and you know, I feel like Dean deserves it, especially yes. if he's about to.
So
go
yeah.
out.
So speaking of Dean and his, you know, announcement of leaving.
Yeah.
And we talked about it a few weeks ago. It's very suspicious that. Mm-hmm. WWE has been part of that announcement, all that yep. we don't need to rehash that. But the kind of takeaway was, we'll know more based on how Dean is booked over mm-hmm. the next several weeks. And so it's been a few weeks, And it's really weird because he hasn't exactly been booked into oblivion.
No.
Like, you know, that was like, oh, he's really leaving. They're just going to bury him.
Yeah.
That hasn't happened.
Like,
where
he looked good against Elias.
He looked good. And also, he's present. That I, you know, that's kind of the thought process of like, well, they're not going to be able to use him long term. There's not a whole lot of merit in investing any time into this guy. Yeah. And they are still investing time into this guy.
Yeah.
At the same time, we're not getting any sort of, you know, push where the, you know, WrestleMania deadline has any sort of relevancy or threat to it.
Yeah. And I believe, like, they said he would be out at the end of April.
Did they say that?
I believe so. So WrestleMania and some change.
Yes.
But all these, all this, this weird situation is really leading me more towards that this might be a work.
Yeah.
You know, especially considering we have direct comparison on how they handled other people who are wanting to leave, you know, and immediately granting it, and some of them not even getting a best in your future endeavors, which they didn't give to TJ Perkins, which makes me wonder what was going on there.
Yeah, so more information has come out, and it's still vague, but it's saying that TJ Perkins has basically been released due to disciplinary reasons.
Yeah. Which, again, I, you know, in WWE's point of view, not a huge loss because it's not something that they were really utilizing. And, you know, he can, he's off to do whatever he wants to be utilized, you know, however he sees fit. Moving on from that.
Okay.
Ric Flair's
birthday?
Yeah, Ric Flair's birthday. Everyone really thought that, you know, Becky Lynch was going to get involved, and that's how she gets, you know,
back involved in the Charlotte, etc. match.
And then WWE, you know, pulls the rug under from most of us and, you know, reintroduces Batista.
Yes. So, going into this segment, for 2 weeks going into the segment, we knew that there was going to be some sort of catastrophe.
Yeah.
We knew that, you know, this wasn't going to be just a birthday celebration. They never are.
No.
We knew so far as to...
Unless it's The Rock.
Right. The Rock.
Then he gets balloons, confetti, all that jazz.
So, we knew somebody was going to get attacked. We were pretty much on the same page with everybody that it was going to be Ric Flair that was attacked.
Yeah.
So, all of the, like, oh, the surprise thing out of nowhere, spent the whole time like, this is not a surprise. I know this is coming. This has come 1,000 times before.
Yeah.
I know that Becky Lynch is going to attack Ric Flair. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't.
Right.
And
they've still found a way to surprise us.
And this is really good. I've been just kind of sitting with this, you know, the sequence all week and been like, this is really what I want from them. I want the surprises. Mm-hmm. I want the twists and turns.
And this segment apparently was orchestrated by Bruce Pritchard.
Yes.
From what we're told.
And so, it, like, you gave me... It's so very hard, and I understand it's hard, and I sympathize with that. It's so very hard to give people exactly what they want, because they want something very specific, but then to also be surprised by that specific thing.
Yeah. Highlight for me in that segment was, you know, as they're introducing the special guests for the party, and, you know, people on the stage would kind of part, and they would walk through. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, you know, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat coming out and just chopping everybody down the line. And then, you know, finally chopping Seth, and Seth selling it like $1 million.
Yeah.
Made me feel real warm and fuzzy on the inside. But I love the way it was shot. I love, you know, seeing Batista just drag a cameraman just to make sure that there's eyes on this.
Yeah.
You know, gives it that added element of, like, you know, this wasn't planned, you know.
And, like, we've said before, one of the best things that TNA ever did was when they made their backstage camera guy a real guy. So when he was, like, you know, filming things that were supposed to be private meetings,
it was being through a
window with, like, blinds or something. So that the wrestlers could act like they were alone. A big difference than the stupid hotel room sequence where
it's like, why is there a cameraman inside the hotel room
for this moment?
Yeah.
And nobody's acknowledging this.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying the word alone a lot.
Alone. And there's another note, the next night on SmackDown, Charlotte seemed really just okay with the fact that her dad had just got, you know, attacked. But then again, if you're Ric Flair's daughter and you, you know, you wouldn't have time to get anything else done if you spent all, you know, if you were worried for every time Ric Flair got attacked by somebody.
And it's been clear that heel Charlotte does not care about her dad.
Oh, sure.
Like, face Charlotte, sure. But heel Charlotte, no. She's using the name as a platform if she wants to. But, like, she's attacked her own dad as heel Charlotte. That's so true. Like,
so she probably gave Batista pointers.
That might have been it.
But, I, you know, clearly this is leading to a Triple H Batista match, which is something Batista's wanted for a while. He wanted it, you know, done a specific way. And it's really the only thing he had any interest doing from now on. You know, which, A, good for him, you know, for finally getting this and, you know, kind of seeing his vision kind of fulfilled. But at the same time, I, you know, when Batista gets his wrestling legs underneath him, he is fun to watch. And I, you know, always kind of like, well, you know, he's been gone for a while, so I'd like to see him face this person or that person, you know. Mm-hmm. Not for the first few weeks, because again, those first few weeks, Batista is clearly out of ring shape.
I'd say, but Batista definitely has ring rust when he comes back.
Yeah.
Now, and to his credit, he gets rid of it quick.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, clearly he was firing on all cylinders by the time we got to WrestleMania, which was, you know, the important thing.
Yes.
And looked really good in those, you know, multi-man matches that, you know, Evolution versus The Shield. So he recovers very well once he gets back in the swing of things, which, you know, I'm hoping, because I'm assuming he's probably not going to have any matches between now and WrestleMania.
No,
probably not. So I'm hoping he's putting in a lot of work at the Performance Center or something. Yeah. Yeah.
It's also worth remembering that Batista's a grandfather.
Yeah, he's a grandfather. Because like, he, you know, much like, you know, because we touched on a lot with, like, DDP, mm-hmm. you know, starting wrestling so late and, you know, not really wrestling until he was 35. That's the same with Batista. Batista did not really hit his peak, you know, until he was 35.
Yeah.
You know, all those great things that you remember him doing back in the day on SmackDown or whatever, he was 35 and up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so there's this, all this, like, you know, all these quote-unquote older guys who can't go anymore.
Yeah.
And, like, age-wise, Batista's closer to them than,
yeah.
you know, your new young mm-hmm. powerhouses.
Yeah. But he, you know, I think smartly enough, you know, moved on from that.
Yes.
You know, and because, like, he works, you know, you've heard it, you know, from a bunch of guys. But I think Edge was the one who I first heard. Like, he works real stiff, and working against, you know, Batista can lead to injuries, mm-hmm. you know, both for him and his opponents just because of his moveset. So, and, you know, Batista had missed a lot of time for injuries. So, you know, good on him for, you know, seeing an exit and taking it and and coming back, you know, when he still is able to.
Yes. Yeah, there's, you know, nothing but praise for how Batista has handled his career for, you know, for most of his career.
Yeah.
But to basically say he's had one, two storylines this decade.
Yeah.
He's come back for, and the fact that when he came back, he was back. And the fact that we know now that because the storyline changed to the Evolution versus Shield kind of thing, mm-hmm. Batista ended up signing on for several additional weeks to kind of help fill that out and finish it and make it the story that was why it's one of the most memorable things that either group has ever done.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is down to, because Batista had every right to walk away
mm-hmm.
when the initial contract was up.
Yeah.
And
especially when, you know, things with WrestleMania had gotten changed so drastically to what was planned.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and like, you know, it shows you again, you know, how great he is and how awful we as a fan base were to him during that 2014 run.
Yeah.
Because I even watching, like, you know, their backstage stuff that they had shown, like, I was feeling really, because, you know, we were all pretty anti-Batista at that point because he wasn't Daniel Bryan.
Right.
And that was really his only
knock
against him during that time frame.
And you look at all the clues and it's like, oh, we know that Triple H has some creative control and we know that Randy Orton is the champion. And it's like, this is just buddies helping buddies
yeah.
at the, you know, consequence of all of our entertainment. Yeah. And so there was a lot of that being piled on that, yeah, in retrospect, it's probably not necessarily.
So really, like, you could look at this run as the, you know, Vince saying, I owe you one, pal, and actually, like, following through with it. Because, like we said, you know, this is what Batista had been wanting to do for a while now, and it's finally happening, you know, while everyone's still physically able to do it. Mm-hmm. So,
now
I hope it goes well for
him. I hope it goes very well. Who is the face in this match?
I don't know, because I feel like Batista deserves to get cheered because of how he was treated in 2014. At the same time, he's up against Triple H, who rides that heel face line and crosses into each territory from week to week.
Yeah. I mean, and so you have Batista, who has said he should be a heel.
Yeah.
Batista has just, you know, gone on record saying, I work best as a heel. Mm-hmm. He wanted to come back in 2014 as a heel, and that was kind of, you know, denied him.
And eventually he got it.
And he got it eventually, yes. And because everything was so much better then.
Yeah.
Everything he's done since he came back was heelish things. I mean, you know, coming in, beating up Ric Flair, gloating about it. That's all heel moves. But he's obviously going to get the pop of, hooray, this guy is back.
Yeah.
He's going to get that next week and the week after and the week after that. Like, just, you have crowds that are excited to get to see Batista for the first time in a long time. It's going to be a while before you can get the boos for Batista, if that's what you're going for.
Yeah. Man, like, that 2014 run, it would have been so much better if they hadn't announced it at the time.
Yeah.
If he just came out as a surprise in the Rumble.
Well, it leaked, remember?
Yeah, I know, and that kind of forced their hands, but
yeah,
I would have done something to throw out some doubt,
so,
you know, leading up to the Rumble or something.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, really, technically, like the AJ Styles signing was leaked, but...
Yes, but AJ Styles was also never meant to win the Rumble.
Yeah, that's
so it's a different animal, I think. And it's the kind of thing where, like, I hate this stuff gets leaked. I think it has kind of put, you know, kind of pumped the brakes on surprise returns at the Rumble.
Yeah.
At surprise anything's at the Rumble. Like, if you
You know, from a certain aspect is fine, because it means you concentrate more on what you have in house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which I feel like is more important. But at the same time, you know, you want to do something to energize the fans during those long matches.
Right. And I'm not saying I want a Rumble full of, you know, old spots just for nostalgia's sake. I'm like, we had Jeff Jarrett this year, and that was plenty for me.
Yeah.
If you had one more, that probably would have been fine, but after that you're starting to push it and you're like, I'm taking all my spots from people I'm hoping are in this. But the actual return that this guy is back now. The thing that, you know, John Cena or Chris Jericho, I guess not Chris Jericho now, but like these guys who are here and back and here and back from time to time, it's a great thing to be surprised and like, oh man, such and such is coming back. Batista coming back in the Rumble would be a fantastic thing.
Yeah.
But the way they did it now was probably better, because it did feel like the actual surprise that we never got last time.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe, like, and we don't know how this is going to play into the whole, like, power struggle storyline that may or might not be happening with Vince and Triple H and Stephanie and Shane.
Yeah.
But it really makes you think, like, maybe they can eventually do a wrestling avatar situation, an elimination match where Triple H would probably just pick himself because it's Triple H.
It's Triple H.
Who would have Batista probably, like, because then it could be revealed that, Shane or Vince had picked Batista to ruin Triple H's big night or something like that.
Yeah.
The scandalous thing would be that it was Stephanie all along pulling the strings.
I think at some point in the, you know, next 40 years of wrestling, we will have a Triple H versus Stephanie storyline.
Yeah, like there's, you know, I feel like it's an avenue that hasn't been explored in the last couple years. Now, granted, you had, like, you know, I think it was Triple H versus Jericho WrestleMania years ago, where, you know, Stephanie was behind Jericho and everything.
Yes.
So you essentially had that.
Yes,
but they don't have the power that they have now.
Their dynamic, you know, back then is nothing compared to their dynamic now.
So I would, like, yeah, I'd be interested in seeing that given their current power dynamic. Shane would probably pick Miz just because they're best friends now. I like Vince being the one behind Batista.
I would not hate it one more mm-hmm. It Was Me All Along from yeah. Vince before Vince takes a bow.
And then who would Stephanie put into that situation? Probably Nia Jax. That's how you introduce your
Well, no, because honestly, thinking about the future hypothetical Triple H versus Stephanie McMahon
yeah.
would be amazing to center that around the women's division.
Yeah.
To make the women's division the battle for power thing.
Where, like, both of their wrestling avatars are from the female division.
Yes, yeah. And that is the... So often you have the men's division being the one that drives the, you know, future of the company storyline. Yeah. That's never the women's division. Mm-hmm. And so to have that division...
This would be a perfect time to do it.
Yeah, especially because you have Stephanie McMahon, this self-proclaimed, you know, leader of the women's division, starter of this revolution, depending on, you know, which video clip you're watching.
Yeah.
But you have Stephanie McMahon, the, like, as a woman, I am, you know, in charge of the women's division. I have made the women's division what it is. And you have Triple H saying, like, literally all of this came from NXT, which is me.
Yeah.
So you have a great moment where they both have this claim to being in charge of
yeah.
it.
I mean, in that aspect, I would have Stephanie pick someone who didn't come through NXT, or at least someone who's not synonymous with their NXT run. Like honestly, no one really thought much of Nia Jax's NXT run. I don't really look at her and be like, oh, that's an NXT person.
Yeah.
Or like Ronda Rousey, obviously, because she never set foot in NXT.
Yeah.
Or Alicia Fox, which, you know, whatever.
Well.
And Triple H can literally pick any one mm-hmm. of the females that have gone through NXT.
This can also be years down the road.
Sure.
And it doesn't even need to be like a wrestling avatar, this is mine, this is yours kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It can be like, you know, factions or teams kind
yeah.
of thing. Again, some of the best power struggle storylines were the ones where the McMahons were a part of multiple stories going
yeah,
on.
Had their hand in a lot of things.
And I actually really dislike those, you know, avatar things when it's for the whole company. When it's freaking... I don't want
to... A feud or, you know, or a hair versus
yeah,
hair
like
match.
I don't want to bring up the hair versus hair match because, like...
Gross.
Ickiness now.
Yeah.
But, yes, but the hair versus hair, we're like, okay, you're fighting over hair. Like, mm-hmm. sure, let's just have, you know, you pick
a
guy.
It's a silly, you know, situation.
Right. But.
But it has no big, like, no big ramifications for the company as a whole.
Right.
Yeah.
But to have a future of the company struggle between two theoretical,
yeah.
you know, owners of the company for the future, I would love to see that have its fingers in a lot of the pies.
Yeah.
So.
I'll agree with that.
All right. Anything else big happened this week that we need to touch on?
Not that I can think of.
Okay.
Other than the fact that I wish Ronda Rousey would just delete her Twitter.
Oh, yeah. The Twitter thing.
We don't really have to talk about it. Everyone knows that she's being an idiot. And,
yeah.
And she, like, I again, someone got into her ear that, you know, fans these days love it when you put a little dose of reality and stuff, and then she's just like, all right, well, I'm just going to expose the entire business right now.
Yeah.
And just call everything fake.
I don't know how much each wrestler has over their own Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much WWE as a company has, you know, somebody on social, that, like, has a social media team being like, hey, we should do this. They are obviously trying to orchestrate Twitter into their feuds. I don't like that.
No, I don't either.
Because
it really feels like it cuts the legs off from under the feuds. Like, you know, man, these people really hate each other. It's all because of Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Yeah.
It really, like...
Because Michael Cole has had to say things about, like, you know, this all started last week when such and such said something on Twitter. And you're like, okay, be professional, y'all.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe we're just not, because, you know, we still remember a time when you had to settle conversations or settle disputes the adult way on, like, MySpace or over the phone.
Well, honestly, part of the problem is so much of the forward momentum in the feud is somebody storming out to the ring,
yeah.
grabbing a mic, and be like, I want to talk about what happened last week.
Yeah.
And so, you know... And then they call out their opponent, like, explain yourself about why you did what you did last week.
Yeah.
And now that, like, oh, but also Twitter is a thing. So it's like, we're so acknowledging that we can communicate to each other mm-hmm. in private all the time through technology.
Yeah.
But we haven't talked about this for 7 days.
Yeah, I mean, and especially because you've got the situation where Rhonda is, you know, trying to be the tough person and whatever.
I'll get to this particular thing. Like right now, I just want to vent a little bit of frustration at the fact that Twitter at all is being used.
We were so ready to end this episode.
Yes, yes, I forgot about this.
Yeah.
But the fact that Twitter at all is being used to really push these feuds.
Yeah.
And part of that is I don't follow all of your wrestlers on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, I follow some of them.
Mm-hmm. And WWE has conditioned me anytime they show a screenshot on their television programming, my eyes just kind of gloss over and I just completely like black out for a few minutes.
Yeah. But also, for the most part, Twitter is fueling the least interesting feuds.
Yeah.
So when you're like such and such, you know, like Naomi said this on Twitter, and then like Baron Corbin said this on Twitter, and I'm like, well, cool, glad I don't follow them. Yeah. Glad that wasn't blocking up my feed.
Yeah, I could care less. Yeah.
So I understand you want to do this. You're doing a bad job with it.
Yeah, especially in this instance.
And I won't even say Twitter in itself is inherently incapable of assisting this.
No.
I do think that there's a way.
There's a way to utilize it, yeah.
But it needs to coordinate. If it's part of your in kayfabe universe, your architect needs to...
It needs to be part of the overall plan.
Okay. So there is a reason that every Marvel movie goes on press tour and Kevin Feige is a part of that.
Yeah.
He has, like... his eyes on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And even as the Netflix stuff has kind of drifted away, and even as, like, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is like, way over here, not touching anything.
Yeah.
You still have him saying things like, oh, yeah, we're going to make these, you know, shows for the Disney Plus streaming service, and they're going to be part of the MCU. And everybody's reaction is, oh, yes, that's excellent. It's definitely going to be integral information, even though we've been burned 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 to 7 times before.
Yeah.
Because they have, you know, built this brand of everything's connected and it's all important and relevant. And you have nobody doing that for Twitter.
Yeah.
Your Twitter aspects are just so separate from everything else. Then let's get to Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch.
Yeah. And I feel like it's also one of those things where, like, you're... Well, you've got Ronda who's getting worked up into a frenzy, and you've got Becky Lynch who's, you know, at least character-wise, is just sitting back and laughing at everything and just having the best comebacks, and it just makes Ronda more upset, and really she should just put her phone down.
Getting to this point, so we are, unfortunately, again, this comes down to, I'm assuming that Ronda has a Twitter account and Becky has a Twitter account, and WWE might at some point be like, hey, tweet something about this.
Yeah.
But there's not somebody orchestrating
the
Becky versus Ronda on Twitter thing.
Right.
And Becky is better at online.
Yeah.
At Twitter, at memes, at just, you know, being an endearing, enjoyable online presence.
In general, just that much more quick-witted.
Right. And I don't need to name names, but you can also see this even clearer in politics, where Twitter's become such a big part of politics and getting your political message mm-hmm. out there
yeah.
and, you know, praising this person while condemning this person and tagging them and responding in politics. And you have politicians, and you know who they are, again, don't need to name names, but who are so good with Twitter and understand Twitter and are able to respond with certain phrases, with certain things. And it makes the ones who are bad at it look so buffoonish, look so miserable, mm-hmm. look so just, you know, incompetent and silly, and it cuts the legs out from under them.
Yeah.
And that same thing happens. You think of all those bad people who are on Twitter, who are not just bad people on Twitter, but people who are bad at being on Twitter.
Yes.
And
we can call them bad eggs because both of them have egg profiles.
No. I'm talking about literal,
I know,
specific. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about.
And I'm not talking about one person. There's one obvious person. But I'm talking about a lot of people who are all bad at being on Twitter. And even if you agree with their message, even if you want to see what they have to say, it's hard to deny that they are not, they're not constantly cutting their legs out from underneath themselves.
Yes.
Just by looking so inept at this.
Yes.
And failing so hard in such a public fashion.
Yeah.
And Rhonda can easily be put in that group.
Yeah.
Where...
which is staggering because, you know, in a lot of these individuals that we're talking about, your whole job, so to speak, is creating a message to be, you know, communicated in a certain fashion, in a way that you get your point across clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that her and all these other people are so bad and abysmal at it, it's not even Twitter's fault. Like, it's just like, you're just bad at communicating what exactly you're trying to say.
Yes.
You know?
Well, and I get that it's got to be frustrating to see this praise being heaped on Becky because she said something on Twitter. And to break it down a little bit, so Becky will do these, even before this, she did these like pun stories that were like very endearing and got her over.
During her, you know, old Becky character, it was more like, oh, that's adorable.
Yes.
You know, now it's like, oh, that's kind of badass.
Yeah.
You know,
and part of it is there's a specific subset of the fandom that follows Twitter. There's a huge swath of them that just don't care. But this specific subset really enjoys how Becky uses her social media to mostly just remind fans that she's relevant.
Right. And I mean, in both instances, both, you know, the A side and B side of Becky, like her usage of Twitter is always consistent with what her current character is.
Yes.
Which goes back to her, you know, ability to communicate a clear message.
But it also has this whisper of you're getting to see a little bit more than what WWE would normally let you see.
Yeah.
And that can go as far back as like Zack Ryder, who got over with the fans, with the internet, just by kind of creating this, I'm creating footage that you get to see because you're the smart fans that get it. You're the ones that are, you know, have one up on WWE who doesn't think you can get this. And so, but it's like, it's this brush up against the wall, you know, that kind of like nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Mm-hmm.
And then Becky's just handling it with hammers here.
Yeah.
Not Becky, Rhonda.
Yeah.
Who's like, oh, we like, you know, a little bit of like fourth wall winking. Well, here's the Kool-Aid version of that.
Right, like, here's everything. Like, going, you know, turning it up to 11 when it requires, like, a 6 or 7, maybe.
Yeah.
And it just... yeah, it's just frustrating and to the point where it's like, okay, it'd be better off if you just stopped.
Yeah. And it's not helping anything. It's...
no.
Hurting everything. And it's...
and we say that about most people who are just bad at, you know, Twitter or communicating with mass amounts of people. Just stop and you would look a billion times better.
Yes. And it's when you see the old out of touch person and then they look old and out of touch and then they...
which kind of...
and then they say fellow kids. And they're like, well...
right. Which, you know, that for me, that all started when Rhonda was going on this weird tirade about millennials, you know, and directing it at Becky. And again, it's like, you guys are born on the same year, the same month, like a couple days apart. Like, what? Like, you just sound that much more out of touch and inept.
Yeah.
You know, like, it don't... because I felt like that came from Vince, you know.
Yeah.
And at this point, don't take promo advice, specific promo advice. Like, don't, you know, if he feeds you a line, don't use that line.
No.
Now, if he's like, you know, in general, get along this message in your own way or something like that, then yeah, fine. But when it comes to like specific lines, stay away from it because that's how you get suffering succotash.
Yes.
And tater tots.
And millennials.
And these damn millennials, or however he put it.
It's just... there's a famous quote, and I don't know who to credit it to.
Abraham Lincoln.
No, because I know that Lisa Simpson said it. And she was quoting somebody else. Okay. But this is quoting Lisa Simpson quoting somebody else.
Well, go ahead and say it. I might know.
Which is, effectively, it is better to be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt.
Sam Johnson.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I believe you.
Yeah, you know, because he's one of my favorites. I know a bunch of his quotes.
Okay.
He also, like, did the, you know, he makes a beast out of himself, gets rid of the pain of being a man. Mm-hmm. It was an Avenged Sevenfold song.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan.
So, but that is the best advice to Ronda Rousey right now, where, like, yes, people might think that you're bad at Twitter. People might think that you're not doing this right. But all you can do right now is just convince them.
Yeah.
So, and then the thing is, like, you know what? You're going to do great at Fastlane.
Yeah.
You just are. You're going to put on a great match. People are going to be cheering for you. And just know that you can do that. Know that bell to bell, you have gone far beyond what any of us ever thought you could do.
Mm-hmm.
Get that. Your promos are not as bad as we feared.
Mm-hmm.
And have improved over the year. You have improved in every way. You have become a WWE superstar like you wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that you've put in the work. We recognize what you were doing to get there. And you're just shooting yourself in the foot here.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, anything else this time?
Unless you want more Sam Johnson quotes.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
As always, you can follow us on Twitter, at CR Attire, where we live tweet whenever it's appropriate and try not to complain about millennials.
That's a big ask. if you have any questions, comments, any millennial complaints that you have.
I mean, I guess since Ronda Rousey is obviously a millennial, we've just complained about millennials.
Yeah.
Only just one specific one.
We're complaining about one specific person, not an entire generation of people.
But they just happen to be a millennial.
True. Okay, whatever. Just send us an email, classicringattire@gmail.com.
We are also on iTunes, where you can follow the podcast, get a new episode every single week. Give us a rating of
5 millennials.
Or write a review. That kind of stuff really works.
And if you are listening to us on InsidePulse.com, leave us a comment on there. We'd love to hear from you.
We're also on Facebook. Easy way to follow Chris. Easy way to follow myself. See what are the kind of things we're working on. Until next time, stay classy and huzzah.
Huzzah.